all had a toy collection at one point or another. Whether they were based on a movie, a Vader game, or a cheap Dollar Tree knockoff, growing up, we not only played with them, they were actually a part of our lives. We'd take them on family trips, shower with them, or even make sure they were by our side as we slept. I did that, Keith. I don't know about you, man. But we'd make sure they were by our side as we slept to make sure those bad demons wouldn't get to us. We treat them pretty much like humans, which is why in 1995, Pixar decided to bring that experience to the big screen with Toy Story. Because what if toys were capable of speaking and moving? But guys, they just did not do it in front of us. So this is going to be quite the heartwarming episode of A Cast of the Past as we review Toy Story. And remember that we publish a brand new episode each and every Sunday. And obviously, all of us watched this movie because we were born in the late 80s, early 90s, so this is right down in the middle with 1995, so those VHS tapes took quite a beating. So now that we've rewatched it, does it hold up? We're going to be talking about that. So yours truly, Juan Velez, I am from Puerto Rico, and joining me, I have the trifecta, starting first with from London, Ontario, Keith Posha. Keith, do you remember when you first watched Toy Story?
I do. I saw it in the theater a long time ago, but sorry, I need to just halt the brakes here for a moment. What was that about showering with toys? What kind of toys are you talking about?
No, dude, this is a real story, but I could save it for... Oh, you already asked me, so what the hell?
Yeah, I traveled to Wisconsin. We're not continuing until this story gets told.
You don't get to talk yet. I haven't introduced you. Thanks to Keith.
I don't exist.
As naturally happens. You don't exist, man.
I went to Wisconsin. I just need to know.
I took a huge bag with me of toys, and I had a wrestling federation where...
And how old were you?
I had to be 23. Like 8 or 9. Yeah, this happened last year, actually. I was like 8 or 9, and The matches would end when they fell from the edge of the shower over to the water. So it was like a Royal Rumble, but with toys. So that was how I showered with them.
And this wasn't a bath. It was a shower.
Yes.
Okay.
What?
I have so many questions.
Like, a kid having toys in the bathtub is not that obscure. I'll put it that way. Like, you know, that's exactly why, like, there's like rubber duckies and stuff like that. So,
like, a shower is business time. Like, if it was a bath as a kid, absolutely. But God, that's so much hot water wasted.
No, I actually filled the tub. Yeah, well, yeah, there's a couple of times.
You filled the tub with a shower?
Keith, I was a kid, for crying out loud.
I'm so confused.
Do you think I'm thinking about how much water I'm spending at that point?
How does bathing work in Puerto Rico that you're filling the tub with a shower? I'm so confused.
From Boston, Massachusetts, you are a human being as well. Is this correct?
Yes, this is correct.
You're not a toy.
I am not a toy.
You do talk.
I do talk.
What did you think about this movie? Did you watch it early 90s?
Yeah, like Keith, I also saw it in the theater way back in 1995. So it was quite the experience. Now, I feel very lucky that I got to see this movie in theaters and absolutely loved it as a kid.
Same here.
I'm pretty sure I didn't.
I remember it being like 7 hours long, though, from seeing it in the theater.
But, you know, that's just, you know, time was different when you're a kid. Because,
it's true.
Like, seeing a movie when you're, like, 6 years old is, like, still, like, maybe 0.2% of your entire life or something like that. Yeah. You know what I mean? Just, like, how old you are, so.
Yeah, to me, for that time frame, movies were the thing running in the background. I didn't really go to the theater, so when I saw this, I'm pretty sure it was a VHS, and it was translated. Remember, I'm in Puerto Rico, so I didn't know about them Tom Hanks and stuff till later, when I finally got a VHS copy that was English language, which was way better, because usually the translated versions were not nearly as good. But I remember I saw this movie, and it just had the biggest impression on me. I mean, I just talked about the Toy Story. The actual Toy Story, my Toy Story, I shared here. So, this just did such an excellent job of getting me into the feel like, yeah, you got to play with these, but they're part of your lives, pretty much, right? Like, it says a lot about your personality, about the movies, the games that you like. When it comes to the 90s, were you a fan of animated movies as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the Disney classics. I think the first movie I remember seeing in theaters was Aladdin, which I think was like maybe 94, 93 off the top of my head.
That's like 92.
And The Lion King, Were definitely the big ones for me as a kid seeing in theaters, along with Toy Story.
Mm-hmm. I watched a lot of like Disney VHSs as a kid. You know those big, thick, plastic, white boxes that Disney movies used to come in? I had a huge collection of those, at least like 20 or 30 of them. Then it would just be a constant loop of the movies, like
that
you mentioned, Aladdin, The Lion King.
Sound of plastic open it. Yep.
It's the best.
That's how you knew you were a cool kid. If you had like a large stack of them, that's the house that you want to go into. But for me, same thing. Lion King, I think, was the one that I really watched a lot in. And another one that we got to talk, as I wrote it here, Space Jam. I think that was like the movie here, because I was actually watching basketball at that point and knew of Michael Jordan. So like
everybody
this combination.
Knew Michael Jordan. He was like the biggest thing ever.
He's such a great baseball player.
Yep. That's what he's known for. I mean, I feel like every kid, at least like at my elementary school, every kid had at least one Michael Jordan t-shirt. It was like a requirement to be at my elementary school.
Like the Chicago Bulls logo, everything. Well, while we're on the topic of that, can you list out a couple of the movies, animated movies that did come out in the 90s?
Yeah. Some other ones we didn't mention. There's Mulan, Hercules, Tarzan, Pocahontas, the Goofy movie, and Iron Giant.
Wow, that's a horrible Goofy. Wow.
So a lot of classics. ton of Disney.
Man, Iron Giant, like I did not know until many years later that Vin Diesel was the voice of the
robot. Yeah, I didn't
know
that until way later too.
I don't think I've ever seen the Iron Giant.
You should. It's really
good. I should.
It was in Ready Player One for a reason, so consider watching it for sure. But did you guys prefer 2D or 3D animated movies? Because obviously, with the exception of Toy Story, and then in 1998, we got A Bug's Life, we got Ants, so we did get some more 3D stuff. I know that there's some people that prefer the classic, like your Lion King, Aladdin, but then as we made the transition to 3D, because I know that was one of your concerns, Keith, is the 3D early on was not all that great. Like a TV example was the series Reboot that I loved to watch as a kid, but when you go back and watch it now, it's a little rough. It's not something that I would recommend people actually watch. The nostalgia machine is real. So which one did you guys prefer and why?
You know, I never really thought about it before today, but I guess I was more of a fan of 2D because really Toy Story is the only example of early 3D that, at least that I can think of off the top of my head, that I enjoyed, because like I had Reboot growing up and I watched it, but I was never a big fan of it. And like I never really enjoyed A Bug's Life. Even going up to The Incredibles, I would say that like even 3D didn't really hit for me going as far as The Incredibles. But 2D, I can name off like 20 things of it that I loved. Like even with Disney stuff, you have your Aladdins, your classic Disney movies, and then things like Pokemon, Digimon, Yu-Gi-Oh, Dragon Ball Z. Like those were my jam growing up. And those are all 2D. So I would say because of that, I'm more towards 2D.
I really don't have a preference. I think it comes down to, even as a kid, it was, do I like the characters and did I have fun watching the movie? So it didn't push me one way or the other. There was way more 2D stuff out there at the time. 3D, like later on in life, I think a lot of the 3D stuff, you know, after the success of Pixar, a lot of other companies started churning out some of these 2D movies. So, I mean, 3D movies rather. So some of the quality that you would expect from Pixar, people thought they were going to get that same quality for some of these other movies. And there were some great ones that weren't made by Pixar, but there were also ones that weren't that great. And I think a lot of companies were just like, hey, guess what? You make a 3D movie, all the families are going to go see it, whether it's garbage or whether it's good. So I think the market got oversaturated. But that was kind of as we were already kind of grown up by the time that really started happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And thing is, when you look back, it's kind of like the video game generation, like when it was the transition from 2D to 3D, where the early 3D games, like look back at your PS1, they were a little bit rough around the edges, right? So some of them don't necessarily hold up. And I think the case is similar to the movies, where if you look at the first Toy Story movie, all of us watched it. And for me, the acting holds up and the story and the characters, but the animation is definitely weird, especially me that watched it on Blu-ray. Maybe if you watch a VHS copy that's not as detailed, a lot of the things are kind of hidden, right? But because it's so vivid, it's so clear, you can tell when they're like, hey, I'm just going to throw this texture here. This is not important. And now, you know, the 3D animated movies, they focus on the hair, they focus on the body movement, they focus on the eyes, and the human characters in this movie, holy crap, they're pretty much aliens. They look awful, right? And I actually saw a fun fact that the reason there's not a lot of human characters in Toy Story is because of money. Because at that point, it was not easy to model 3D characters that were based on humans. So if you notice, they look very similar to the actual toys. They don't look that different. So
it's true.
That's one of the biggest differences. Where 2D, I mean, you can go back to the 40s, the 30s, right? With super early animation. So we have decades upon decades versus what? This is like the first real big 3D movie that came out. And what about toy collecting?
I was going to say, really, it took Pixar a long time to figure that out, because this Toy Story 1 isn't the only example of this. Like, I don't know exactly when it happened. I'm sure we'll figure it out in this journey of a podcast, but somewhere between The Incredibles and Inside Out is when they figured out how to model humans, because even The Incredibles is bad. But they figured it out at Inside Out. So somewhere between then is when they figured it out, which is a decade after Toy Story.
Yeah. And what about the toy collecting? Did you guys get into that in any form?
I had a Buzz Lightyear.
I did too. I had like the, whatever, like the 12-inch or whatever Buzz Lightyear action figure. That was pretty much like the one in the movie. I don't think it had, like, it definitely didn't have, like, blinker lights on the wings that I'm just like, man.
False advertisement.
Yeah. Like, that thing would need so many batteries to stay going. But, yeah, that was the only one I had. I don't think I had any other character.
I have more today than I did back then. Like, we have, between my girlfriend and myself, we have multiple Buzz and Woody's. I got her a Bullseye for Christmas. Like, we have collected more Toy Story in a nostalgic factor than I had toys growing up.
Yeah, that's another really interesting thing to think about. In the 90s, we were kids, right? So I think it's hard to really compare, but I don't think toy collecting was a thing, really. I think people just had toy collections, but they were collectors, if that makes sense. Now with a Funko, with everything else, like, anything can be justified for a Funko. Like, I have a Golden Girls Funko Pop. I have Funko Pops for video games. I have a Golden Girls t-shirt. But if you did that back in the day, it wouldn't be seen maybe as cool. Maybe be like a geek culture was perceived to be a bad thing.
If you look at some of those, like, very, very, very low-tier Star Wars toys, like, oh, here's Luke when he was taking a dump in the cantina. Like, they existed, but it was just in different forms.
It's been around. I think the toy collecting, like Keith is kind of alluding to, has been around for a very long time. It just didn't hit the mainstream culture.
Yeah.
The help of the internet and having access, it makes it a lot easier to complete a collection when you can now contact someone halfway across the world to mail you, to sell you the one action figure you're missing that just happens to be Luke Skywalker taking a dump at the cantina. So,
and it's probably like $5,000. That dump better be damn good, because some of the toys, dude, they go up there. But for context, one of the reasons that we're doing this episode this year is because we're actually going to be getting a fourth Toy Story movie. And when that was first announced, people were a little bit nervous, because even going back to the third one, just showing up the timeline. So Toy Story 1 came out in 1995. Then a couple of years later, in 99, we got the second one. Then we went a long time without a new one, because it wasn't up until 2010 that we got the third one. And I remember when it was first announced, people were kind of like, is this really necessary? Are you just doing the cash grab thing now? And then going back again this year, 9 years later, basically 9-10 years, we're getting a fourth one. How important do you think that Toy Story originally was a trilogy? It's no longer that. How important is the franchise or the series for you in the 3D animated movies?
For me, it didn't really hit me how important it was until the third one came out. So the first one obviously was it was a landmark movie, first like full CG movie to really, you know, break it big. And I loved it as a kid. It was probably up there as one of the movies I watched the most growing up. 1999, watching Toy Story 2. This is one I need to watch again because I have the least memory of this one. I think I only saw it once or twice, max. And a lot of people love this one more than the first one. But that third one, it was just like the tone in the story of that about, you know, a kid growing up and giving away his toys and stuff. And I'm watching this when I'm in college. So you're relating so much to it. And like it was really like I was legitimately like fighting back tears during that movie because it like,
oh, my God, it hit me so hard.
And I'm just like,
so brutal.
Yeah. And as I'm watching it, I'm like, all of these movies have kind of like hit me at the right time growing up. Like people our age were really the perfect audience for this movie because we saw each kind of installment like a little bit later in our lives. And that third one coming out as we're young adults, like was very powerful because like we're basically Andy, you know what I mean? The way that it lined up with the timing of the movies.
I've never really thought of it like that, but you're 100% right where like our age is really like we are the Toy Story in that way where we really like our generation has mirrored Andy growing up where we all saw this when we were 5 or 6. We were very much all about our toys and playing with them and all of these crazy adventures. And then by the time Toy Story 2 comes out, well, we're hitting our teenage years and our old toys are starting to break and maybe we don't like them as much as we did anymore. And then by the time Toy Story 3 came out, it really was a whole letting go thing. And now I'm really sad because anytime I think about the end of Toy Story 3, it makes me want to break down into tears. But, you know, that makes me skeptical for Toy Story 4, even though at the time of this recording, there's been that one teaser that's come out with the spoon dude, and it looks really funny. It was really funny in that teaser and a lot of character. The way that last one wrapped up was just so good that it makes me skeptical for Toy Story 4.
Let's actually talk about the movie that we're supposed to be reviewing right now, which is the very first Toy Story movie. And thank you for that context, Ryan, because I really didn't get that. Like the fact that the years went by in the movie, but so did the years go by in real life. So, yeah, it's a matter of what's it going to be in 2019. But going back to 1995, we're kids. We're getting the presents from Christmas, from birthday gifts. And with this movie, what would you say was your general impression going back now, 2019? You watched it again. What was your takeaway from it?
It's just a fun movie. It made me laugh, like genuinely laugh out loud more than I thought it would. And I really enjoyed my time going back watching Toy Story.
It's always a joy to watch this movie. I hadn't seen it in so long that there was a lot of moments that, like, I was like, oh, yeah, and it was, like, fun to rewatch it. And then there was also, a few little hidden, like, lines in there that I didn't pick up on as a kid that I thought were funny. Like, one particular thing that just stuck out to me was, like, as, Woody and Buzz are, like, getting picked up by the claw machine, how, like, the aliens are helping him, get into Sid's hands, that he's just like yelling at them and he calls them zealots because they're all like religious freaks or whatever for their claw. I just thought that was hilarious, like something like a vocabulary word I wouldn't have picked up on as a kid. I just thought it was really funny.
It's one of the best things about cartoon shows or kid movies. When you watch them growing up, they put a lot of stuff for the adults. It's kind of like, hey, you're watching this with the kids, but this one, this quote's for you, buddy. You're going to get a kick out of that. And
yeah, and it's not even, it's like it's inappropriate or anything like that, but it's just something only the adult would get. That's a funny little
it's
nod.
Subtle. It's extremely subtle. And it makes me wonder, did my parents get that back in the day?
There's a lot of
most
fascinating
likely
stuff like that. And taking it to you first, Keith, because I know when we first talked about the fact that we're going to go back down this memory lane, you mentioned that it wasn't until The Incredibles and Inside Out that really clicked for you in terms of the animation for the human characters and just little things. Did the animation with this movie, did it interfere now that you're not watching it with the nostalgia factor? You're watching it in 2019. Do you think it held up, or it definitely lessens the experience now maybe than when you were a kid?
Well, I'm really two minds about it, because when you're talking about the toys, it holds up. It's probably some of the best Pixar animation ever. The way that they animated Buzz, Woody, Ham, Mr. Potato Head, all of them look so good, even today. Like, I watched a Blu-ray version of it, and it just holds up so well. But then you get to the rest of the movie, like the dog, like the humans, and then you just kind of take a step back, like, ooh, they didn't hit this one at all. And that's where it kind of falls apart for me. But at the same time, they're not the protagonists of the movie. It's about the toys. They're kind of secondary characters. So from that degree, it's a little easier to get around that and make that not ruin the entire experience for me, because the parts of that movie that should hold up do hold up. And really, that's the most important part.
What about you, Ryan? This, for me, this could be the fact that I didn't watch it on Blu-ray. I was kind of just streaming it on my phone. I watch a lot of movies on my phone, so forgive me on that. So I wasn't watching it in like ultra Blu-ray HD. So I didn't find the animation really that bad at all. I agree that the human characters definitely look the weirdest. Everything else looks fine. There might be a few like textures here and there, like he said, that don't look that great. Mm-hmm. But
it's the faces.
Yeah.
The faces are shiny and kind of look like toys.
I feel like they knew their limitations. Like, you basically almost never really see the mother's face that much. They really minimize that. And like, I mean, you really see, like, I feel Sid's sister and Sid are really the humans you see the most with their face. Like, you don't even see Andy that much. And those, yeah, it looks a little weird, but like I said, human characters all around, they kind of knew their limitations and they really minimized it. They picked their spots and made it count. So it doesn't distract from the movie that much at all. I was like, they look a little weird, but I'm already over it. I'm still enjoying the hell out of this movie.
One thing I loved is that they were able to tie that into the actual story of the movie, because I think that you can sum up what Ryan said with they play to their strengths. So they know that from an animation standpoint, they can't do a lot of the humans. One of the reasons that Andy's dad is not even mentioned in the movie is for budgetary reasons. They said, look, it's just really difficult to do that. So the fact of the matter is that they got to focus on the toys in the movie rather than everything else, because they could have done a 50-50. They could have done 50% of the movie, have it be about Woody and Buzz and everything. But if you notice, we cut to Andy when? With the key moments, our birthday, when they're going to the pizza place, when they're going to these specific things that tie directly back to the situation happening with the toys. And I think that really helps out with the story, because I think if they focused even just a little bit on the mother, the movie would not be as memorable, because the toys would just be taking up a portion.
And yeah, we care about the toys. We don't really care about the human. Like, the only reason we care about Andy is because But like Woody cares about Andy. So it's all about the toys, and they focused in the right place.
And to sum up the story, it's basically Woody and the gang. They're the toys that Andy has had for many years. We see Woody with the Sharpie at the bottom, but then birthday comes and oh boy, there's a new box, a shiny box. Did you guys ever have that experience of, you have a bunch of gifts and you think that you're done, but then, wait, there's more. You get another one. I never had that experience. I don't know about you guys.
Mine was a VCR. So, yes and no. Okay. Yes.
I don't know if I ever got... Yeah, bonus I don't think gift. It was in the same way of like, oh, here's this surprise last
but
gift.
But wait.
No. So, we should do that for our future kids someday.
We should.
Give that experience.
Exactly. And then just say, oh, no, you got exactly what you were going to get.
It's like, oh, it's a Buzz Lightyear action figure. Why the hell did you get me this?
Yeah.
You're supposed to like it like the movie.
Well, 2019, man. We're starting a new generation of Toy Story movies. But I love that, that there's the buildup, and then the fact that they get the toy soldiers going downstairs to figure out what is in that box, and then the batteries come out. So they tell all of these awesome tiny stories and how they actually get there, and then they put a Buzz Lightyear right on top. What do you guys think about the fact that Buzz Lightyear believes he's real? All the other toys, they're self-aware, like, we are Andy's toys. We are here for entertainment. He doesn't play with us all the time, but then here comes Buzz. And he's just like, no, dude, I'm a space dude.
It makes you wonder if each one of those toys went through that, where Rex was like, I'm a dinosaur, rawr. Oh, wait, no, I'm not. Like, if they have some weird, like, toy waterboarding session.
Jesus.
That, like, basically makes
them think. You're a toy. You're a toy.
Keith went there.
Poor Woody.
I did.
I liked it because that was a very smart way of creating two character arcs, essentially. You know, Buzz has a character arc and Woody has a character arc, and they're kind of, they're coming to grips at the same, you know, they're both happening simultaneously while their relationship is, you know, starts out in turmoil, and then in the end they become friends. So it was very masterfully done. The fact that you're spending time with Buzz, who's in denial about what, or doesn't understand what he actually is, and Woody, who's having a hard time accepting that he's could be potentially replaced, as he's not the number one toy anymore and he has to accept that. It was super well done. You know, you see a lot of movies where it's like one character really just has their story arc, but to have two going on at the same time and having the interactions between those two characters, I thought it was just super well done.
Yeah, I think that's their biggest success of the movie, simply because there's no time where it feels more like, oh, this is Woody's story, or oh, this is Buzz's story. They do such a good job of intertwining them both and giving them both the same amount of time, or at least it feels like they're given the same amount of time and importance, that it really is a story, two stories happening at the same time, like right beside each other. And one of them's not the more important of the two. They're both equal.
They also did a really good job at the beginning of the movie of setting the tone, because notice how the biggest interaction I'd say you see with Andy and his mom is at the very beginning, right? They're sort of in the kitchen. He's playing with a Woody. He puts him up on one of the furniture, but then all of a sudden you see the perspective shift to Woody. So it lets you know, like, okay, now you're watching from the perspective of the toy, but Woody's not actually moving. Up until that point, we haven't seen him talk or anything. Then they put him in the room, and that's where the gang comes together. All the toys are talking. So my question there is, what did you think about that? I guess I'll just say ridiculous premise, right? Where,
like, the
toys come to life. Yeah.
Yeah.
The rule is, whenever you're around humans, no, you don't do any movement unless you're Sid, because you're an asshole. Everybody else, nobody's nearly as bad. Oh, do you remember your reaction when you were a kid? Because I think that's going to be drastically different as opposed to what we think of it now.
I knew going
think it's
in
fun.
That, like, because of the trailers and everything, I kind of knew the concept and I thought it was really cool. I also remember that I have vague memories about this, but I know there was a movie, like, in probably a book, like The Indian in the Cupboard or something,
yeah,
which was a similar concept where I think he had this cupboard and if you put a toy in it, it would, like, come to life. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that came out before Toy Story. So I was kind of familiar with that concept.
Excuse me while I fact check that.
Yeah.
Please.
Thank you. So I was like, oh, that's so cool. So I was really hyped to see it because I thought that was just an amazing concept. And as a kid, it's like to think secretly when you leave your room, your toys are all alive and having an awesome time is actually kind of a really fun thing to think about. And it's also something you can really play on in the movie where it's like, hey, you could be like, hey, when a kid loses his toy, oh, maybe it's because the toy is actually alive and it actually moved itself. It wasn't just because the kid actually lost it.
Did you ever think that was a possibility in real life when
no.
you were a kid? That, huh.
Even as a kid.
As a kid, I like having the imagination. Like, I thought for a second as a kid, it was fun to imagine, like, oh, that's what my toys do when I'm at school and stuff like that. It was fun to imagine it. And I really like how they, it was the scene with the army men where one of them gets crushed. It's like, oh, Andy didn't leave those toys out. It's because the toys got caught doing their thing. And that's why they're in the middle of the floor.
Well, it's really fascinating to think about all the situations, and with toys being misplaced. Oh, yeah. Fact check, Keith.
Yes, for the record, the Indian in the Cupboard came out like 4 months before Toy Story.
Oh, wow.
They're both 95. Okay. Indian in the Cupboard is July 14th. Toy Story is November.
Yeah, because I think...
it would be hard.
I was going to say, copy. I think I saw that. I used to go to New Hampshire, this area that has a drive-in theater, and I think I saw that Indian in the Cupboard movie in like the drive-in theater. So that was just before Toy Story. Wow. Yeah,
what's
that's kind of crazy. That
theater
too.
Like?
Well, I'm sorry?
What's a drive-in theater experience like? I never went to one.
So I actually went to that same one again this past summer. But it's honestly, nowadays, in comparison to theaters, it's not that great. It was,
yeah,
it kind of
sucks.
Yeah. Especially, but in fairness, I don't have a good car for it. If you have like a pickup truck or like a big SUV where you can open up the back and everyone can sit, or you bring some lawn chairs and stuff, then it can actually be a really fun experience, especially if it's a really nice, like a really beautiful summer day, summer night. It can be great. If you're just sitting in like a sedan like I am, it's like, man, this kind of sucks. The screen's not as clear. You're listening to it through a friggin' radio on your car. And yeah, nowadays the theaters near my house have like recliner seats that are super comfortable.
Same here.
So it's like, yeah, it doesn't really hold up unless you have like a perfect car for it.
Yeah. They suck these days.
There's not many
That's
left.
What it comes down to.
It's a gimmick. It's all for the gimmick. There's really not many left around, at least where I am.
It's I know. We have one in Puerto Rico in the South, but I never went to it. But whenever I heard about it, it's just, that thing is uncomfortable because you're in the car, but you could just be sitting in a movie theater. You know, that just, plus you're spending gasoline if you have the car on. I don't know if you can even have the car on. I never went to one, so I don't know.
You can just, you run it on your battery. It's fine. If you just have the radio going, it's not going to like kill your car battery, even though you don't have the engine on. But also, it's really hot in Puerto Rico, so it's probably not as comfortable to sit outside.
It's going
to
suck here.
Where like up in New Hampshire, you'll have like nice kind of cool summer nights that aren't that bad at all.
So out of the movie, which would you say is your favorite character?
Mr. Potato Head. He had like the sharpest one-liners, and the way that Don Rickles just performed it all. Mr. Potato Head made me laugh the most in that movie, and easily my favorite character, I would say, of the entire Toy Story franchise.
I would probably like Buzz and Woody. I know they're the main characters. I love a lot of the characters in it. I love Slinky as well. But I always found Buzz and Woody just to be so hilarious. So the way they played off each other was just amazing. Tim Allen and Tom Hanks. You can't give them enough credit.
Yeah. Here's a controversial take I'm going to make here. I hate those little dumb Pizza Planet alien guys. These guys for the video version, I can't stand them. Of the cup I'm drinking out of, they're so grating to me and annoying. I hate them more than anything.
I find them so funny. I thought it was hilarious.
I gotta ask you something, Keith. Those little green guys whose name I can't remember, or minions?
Oh, the green guys. The minions are the literal scum of the earth.
Oh, okay. Okay, you were choosing that you'd rather...
I'd rather have the green guys.
I was about
the
to
minions
say.
Can, like... No, I'm not going to say it on this show.
Keith, we've talked about this.
I'm just going to calm down now.
I completely agree. Minions, like, the only thing I'll say about the minions is, like, you can tell they were deliberately, like, engineered to just sell toys. And, you know, just to be cute toys. It just feels so inauthentic.
What society has done with them, like those stupid memes that like, oh, I'm not a Monday person, and it's a minion with like a dress on, and
and you know what?
Okay, we Pixar, need to not Pixar talk about the movies sell out anymore.
Like that. Pixar wouldn't sell out like that.
Although, come on, Ryan. You're saying that the Minions were made to sell, like, this is a movie about toys, which
it is.
Guess what happens after this movie? What does the kid want? He wants the
they
toy.
Do
guess
come
what?
You out can with get toys. That but you toy. Know what? I think that is, of course, yes, they're going to sell the toys. But I didn't feel like it was made to sell those toys. It was just kind of a byproduct of the popularity of the movie. Of course, they're going to make the toys. Every Disney thing sells toys of those characters.
It's true, but there's a difference between like making something to sell it, a toy, and then just enjoying the movie so much or the product so much that you go out and buy the toy. Like most of those old 80s cartoons like Transformers and G.I. Joe, those were made to just sell toys. Yeah. That's why you have so many versions of Optimus Prime and so many G.I. Joes that would show up for an episode and then die in a helicopter fire because they were just there to like, oh, now you've got Optimus Prime Decepticon version for that one episode. But Toy Story, I think, was just so much fun and like a genuine great experience that you didn't want to buy a Buzz Lightyear just because you needed it. You wanted that Buzz Lightyear. You wanted to have
because
Buzz
you liked the
from
character
the movie.
So much, you know.
Exactly. You wanted to have Rex because he was just so much fun to have. And I think there's a big difference there.
I think that's the main and most important thing about the movie, because the animation can be good or bad, but if the voice acting and if the personality of the characters don't shine, then this is all for nothing, because one of my favorite characters, kind of like you, Keith, is Mr. Potato Head, because he feels like the adult of the group, and I think that's on purpose. I think that's why Don Rickles is the character. He feels like the one that would curse at a moment's notice, but doesn't, because it's a kid's movie. But having that collective bunch of Woody is the superhero, quote unquote, but then Buzz Lightyear comes around, so it's almost like this Batman Superman thing that we're getting nowadays, right? But then you have Mr. Potato Head as the adult in the conversation, then you have Slinky as the puppet, but then you have the pig, and then you have Rex. Like, it's an entire family, and each one really plays into a role. It's not just a bunch of random toys. Like another movie that it's not necessarily good, but it sold a lot of toys, is Cars. Cars sucks. That is a bad movie. And it's made by basically the same people. A lot of the same names are tied to Cars. So I don't know what happened, but guess what? They made Cars 2. Why? Because the first
Larry
one made a lot
cable
of money.
Guy happened. That's
and then
why
they made
sucks.
Cars 3. Because they were like, seriously, we're going to get did? It on the third time. And I don't know if they did. I never even really saw the Cars movies. Everyone
it's
was
bad,
like,
dude.
Don't bother.
The entire time I'm like, it's got to be good. Look at the names tied to the movie. It's got to be good. No, it really, really was not. Who would you say was the most outstanding performance from a voice acting standpoint consistently? There can be your one-liners like Don Rickles, for example, with Mr. Potato Head, but who do you think really delivered throughout the entire movie?
I mean, I you got to give it to Tom Hanks, but Tim Allen's also incredible in this movie. Just the both of them. And correct me if I'm wrong, and maybe I can look this up, is I think in kind of a rare thing, were they doing voice acting together in the same room? I want to check that, because I think that's something they don't typically do, but they wanted to have that banter. I will look that up.
Yeah,
but
that sounds right
from
what I remember.
But either way, whether they did or they didn't, they were both just incredible in this movie. And it's really, if they didn't pull it off, this it wouldn't have been what it was.
Agreed.
Well, meanwhile, I can actually pull off one fact that's tied to that voice acting. So the voice acting for Buzz Lightyear had to be completely redone after it was finished, because initially, and this is something that I found, I think it was on MTV.com, so credit to them. Initially, he was self-aware that he was a television character, not a human, but he had a TV show. So throughout the movie, he made references to the fact that, hey, you know, I'm Buzz Lightyear from the television show. But they didn't like how that came out. It wasn't as fun as, hey, what if he thought he was a real human being that just crash landed onto quote unquote Earth, right? So they had to completely redo the voiceover, which leads me to believe that maybe they weren't in the same room. And mm-hmm. that's really challenging, right? Especially with video games. I think with a lot of movies now, they do have the entire bunch together because of that chemistry. But I know that in the 90s, and we talked about Resident Evil 2 and the voice acting in that and how it's trash. I guarantee you, with a lot of the stuff in the 90s, it was, hey, Keith, here's a microphone. Here's the lines. Here's your character. Just say it. We're good to go. Like, don't worry about the rest. Like, now we really care about that.
Ada!
What would you say was the best moment in the movie?
That's a tough one because, yeah, narrowing it down to one is tough. But if I'm going to have to choose, I'm going to have to say the whole Sid's bedroom thing, like seeing the arc of those, like, basically misfit toys, how at first you think they're monsters and then how they're misunderstood. And they do this entire character arc without saying a single word from all of these toys. And then just the entire escape and then going, like having the rocket, the firecracker going to the truck. I think that's my favorite part of the movie by a mile.
Yeah, basically similar to Keith, I think when the toys come alive and scare Sid away, it's just super satisfying, and how like they just know how to be like super creepy and just freak him out. And like, I love how Tom Hanks is just like, or Woody's complimenting them. He's like, oh, coming out of ground, that was genius. Like, I love that. It was just so fun because they built up Sid as this kind of great villain. I mean, it's so creative to be like, okay, we have a story about toys, but it's like, who is the true kind of villain? It's like, all right, well, what if there's this punk kid who destroys
toys?
You know, I think everyone growing up knew there was that kid who was like extra rough. You didn't want to let him borrow your toys because you knew that they weren't going to come back in the same condition because they were too rough with them. So I think a lot of people could kind of relate to those types of kids.
Guys, and I have a question.
I have a question.
Oh, okay.
My question first, sir. Do you think in Toy Story 4, Sid will still be in therapy from his toys coming to life and talking to him like that?
I think it's going to be a thing of he's leaving therapy, but as he leaves therapy, something happens that's almost like a deja vu.
Do you ever see Sid again in the other two movies? Or no?
I don't think so. Because maybe in three. I haven't seen three.
They're moving away. So theoretically, they're not really going to run into him again. But that would be
four. Sid comes back.
Yeah, as a shell of a man. A broken husk of a child.
Keith, here's the question I have to ask. And I don't know why. I'm sorry, man. But I feel like I need to address it to you. And then Ryan's a bonus.
Okay.
Because Ryan seems to be the more normal one of the bunch. So I don't think he's capable of doing this.
It's one way to put it.
So, were you that kid, Keith, growing up? Were you the one that was rough on the toys?
I had a phase where...
I knew it.
I would do stuff like that. But that wasn't until I was much older. Like, I actually had a lot of respect for my toys and would play with them, and I would get really upset when one of them would break. And then by the time I was a teenager, I was taking my reboot toys and lighting them on fire in the backyard. It was a good time.
And sometimes you have people from Puerto Rico ship toys to you in Florida. You know, just casual things, you know, that people do in 20 plus years old. I don't know if you ever shared that story in any of the podcasts. The Star Wars pyramid thingy.
Oh, the holocron. Yeah. There was
a
Sith holocron.
It is a pyramid.
It's a Sith holocron, and I will not hear any of it. It's a cool collectible. That's more of a collectible than a toy because it's a book and a couple trinkets. But it's not available in Canada. So I was meeting you in Florida for a trip, and I got you to order it for me. I gave you the money, and then I just took it from you.
This giant box.
In Florida.
A giant box. That when I went to I don't know if this would make it past TSA right now, though, with the situation. Well, I'm not even going to get to that right now, but I went to TSA. They had to check it. So they just see this giant pyramid. I'm like, I really hope they don't think I'm into some like kinky, just crazy stuff. And then when we're in Florida, it must have been like 2 a.m. or something. I wake up because I'm hearing this sound. And it's Keith standing in front of the TV. I'll never forget this. The TV was right here. Then here's the pyramid thing, the holocron. The holocron. And he's just touching the buttons to make it open. And he's got this smile. He's got the smile that Andy had when he first saw Buzz Lightyear. It was that kind of thing.
It's real cool. anybody that doesn't know what this is, Google like Sith Holocron opening. It's got lights, it's got sound, it's badass. I'll find it somewhere and I'll play it on a future episode.
You better still have that thing, because was a pain.
I think I held it in my hands in the last few weeks going through all of my stuff.
Okay, good, good. But going from one Sith to the Toy Story Sith. See how I did that there? But I have to agree. I think that was the best arc, because even how that happened, at the beginning of the movie, they showcase Sith. Sid. Damn it, because of the Star Wars. Sith is Star Wars. Sid yes. is Toy Story. Sid. Yes. Okay. They showcase Sid as this evil kid. What?
Not Psycho Sid.
No, that's just very different. Sid. We're not Sid Vicious as well. Anyway, so they show him, and it's like, well, how are they going to possibly get to the house? Because I thought, is he going to break into Andy's house to steal the toys? But then how they go to the pizza shop, and then the ridiculous situations that happen with the little green dudes, and then they're grabbed, they take them home, and then they see all the other toys that have been transformed, and then they initially think that they're bad, but turns out they're good. They're actually helping each other. Leading up to that, it's throughout the entire movie, Sid makes it. If you remove him from the movie, there's very little going on. And I think we figure out, oh, it's going to be about Woody versus Buzz. But the main event, the real thing that makes this movie what it is and it makes it so memorable, is the fact that he's there. Because as Ryan mentioned, we all knew that kid. Maybe that kid never bullied us, but maybe that kid was like Keith. He was going through a phase, destroying some stuff, but he's better now. Keith.
Yeah.
You're Sid.
I'm better now. Sure.
Yeah, you are. Yeah,
there needed to be some sort of danger for the toys, right? So it was like, what would be the most fearful thing for a toy? And it's some kid that's going to mistreat them, right? So I thought mm-hmm. that was very well done.
Yeah, and I feel like the easy angle would have been like to have the conflict against Andy. Like, at no point in the movie do Sid and Andy confront each other. Yeah. It's just Sid versus the toys. So Andy's not really even a part of that picture, a part of the problem in that. It's just Sid versus the toys.
Exactly. And I guess the other part we haven't really touched up on is the external part, because most of the house is the movie, right? That is the setting of the movie. It's Andy's house and everything around it, because they're going to be moving eventually, so they got to find a moving buddy. But between the pizza, all the way back to the day that they're going to be moving out, you know, we see that Woody and Buzz are gone. Andy can't find them, so they leave. So it's this process of how do they actually get back to him? And it's like a chase scene, right? It's almost like a driving scene in a movie or something that's super unrealistic. But I mean, hey, yeah. We're talking about talking and moving toys. So I don't think that should be up for discussion. Did you guys like that part?
Yeah, I thought it was really cool. I love just how all the toys were utilized throughout the movie. The RC car, you know, the fact that you had the RC car, then Buzz had the rocket, like it all worked. But I love how they used it earlier in the movie with things like the speak and spell, and they talk about the, you know, meetings that they had. They really paint this world of what life is like as a toy. And I love how Woody's using the little microphone thing at the beginning.
Yeah.
Just how all the toys kind of help each other out and how they work together is just super fun. You know, they're trying to get Buzz after he fell out the window. They get the barrel full of monkeys. And, you know, it's just they have so much fun with how would toys be resourceful when they're trying to get things done. So it all kind of comes together at the end with the rocket and the RC car, even though there's some unrealistic things, like they couldn't run to catch up to the car, but they can run to catch up to the moving truck.
Right.
You know, little things like that where you're just like, okay, whatever. Because you're having so much fun, you're not really thinking about that stuff too much.
It's true. At the end of the day, it's a movie about toys coming to life. So it's really hard to nitpick at that stuff. And it's just the little details of it that are so great. Like the gag of parts falling off of Mr. Potato Head never got old for me. Like when his arms would rip off or something would hit him and his entire facial features would fly off. Just so good.
And then the thing that sort of glues the movie together is this rivalry between Woody and Buzz, right? Like, Woody's the new toy, and then Woody's the old toy, and then Buzz is the new one. And that is sort of the playing field for everything else that happens, because Sid, if it wasn't for Buzz and Woody's interaction, Sid would never have been a factor, right? So I love how they glue everything together to have it be like just an awesome thing. So what are your closing thoughts about Toy Story? Are you happy that you saw this? Do you think it makes you pumped up for the one that's going to be coming out this year? Are you more concerned about that, having watched this one recently?
It makes me more hopeful than I was leading into it, because at the end of the day, Toy Story is just a great movie. I would go as far as saying that the original Toy Story is a timeless movie where I feel confident that I can show it to my kids, my eventual kids, and they will enjoy it as much as I did as a kid. It's just a fun experience, and there's a lot of movies that don't hit that the way that Toy Story does. Like, it's fun for a cheap laugh, or it's fun for like a dumb laugh, but Toy Story is just a genuine good movie where, like you said earlier, there's something good for adults in there as well. Everybody can sit around and enjoy this movie. So if they can capture that magic again with Toy Story 4, I will be through the roof.
Yeah, I mean, Toy Story is probably the most perfect family movie that I think exists. I know it's a very high praise, but I think it completely deserves it.
It's up that, there, for
I mean,
sure.
It's a fantastic movie. It's a fantastic franchise. I mean, there's a reason it's the highest rated franchise on Rotten Tomatoes, which has a lot of people scared for the fourth one. Like, will they be able to keep that going?
Paddington's hot on its heels.
Yeah. So it's really something for everyone, because that was a movie when the second one came out, it was like my mom was just as excited to see it as I am because of how good these movies are, that it doesn't really matter how old you are. There's really something everyone can enjoy, unless you're a soulless person. Like, just how can you not enjoy these movies? Yeah, it's just about as perfect as a family movie can get. There, it's enjoyable for anyone.
I think what makes it so memorable is that it's an animated movie, but it's a movie first, if that makes sense. When I think about a lot of modern stuff, for example, Frozen. When Frozen became a hit, I actually bought a Blu-ray because I'm like, man, if I love all these 3D animated movies, I'm going to love Frozen. And then it seems like every three steps, they would break out into song. For anything, like your toilet breaks, they're going to sing about the toilet break.
I'm the same way about musicals. I'm like, really? Another song?
Exactly. And then with this movie, no musical, no real... There's a couple of things with the sad music. I mean, the soundtrack is something we didn't even talk about. And when you think about Toy Story, you immediately think about the opening track and just the way everything is laid out. It's like a normal movie. They didn't make a movie about kids or a kids movie. They made an excellent movie that can appeal to kids through the toys. But if you notice, the toys are going through any situation that people will be going through in a couple, in a relationship, when you have a brand new friend and somebody's like the third wheel. So it is not a kids movie. And I think that is what makes it a great family movie, because as you guys said, it makes it relatable for everybody. But I thought we should have maybe just a little bit of fun. We have a couple of facts, even though I've revealed most of them throughout the episode. So disregard those so far. But Ryan, for the ones that we have not read, could you quickly go over them?
All right. So let's see. Did we talk about Andy's character model?
No.
Apparently, it was reused several times in the film due to constraints. So they kind of just copy-pasted Andy a little bit. They didn't really show any faces of those kids. So, I mean, hey, why not do that? No one's really going to notice.
Andy and Sid are, I think, is the most noticeable copy-paste there, where Sid is basically Andy with bad teeth.
Yeah, even his little sister, all of them. And this is according to ohmy.disney.com, but makes sense. You don't have a lot of time. You're not going to show a lot of faces, so why complicate yourself, right? Just put some costumes on.
I think
on.
Part of the limitations made this movie great because, sure, they had to cut corners in a few places, but there's no wasted effort. They're not going to add, you know, a bunch of random side plots that don't need to be there. They just make this nice, tightly woven movie. and that sometimes limitations can be a positive. So another one that's pretty interesting, animators strapped boards to their feet to figure out how to animate the toy soldiers.
That's funny. Amazing. I'm guessing like lengthwise, so they were connecting their 2 feet with one board.
Yeah, it's like, okay, if I had to walk and I had this stand thing underneath me, how would I walk? So that I thought that's very creative. They wanted to make sure they would get it right, so it just wouldn't look weird that these army men can just like slide around or something.
Did anybody actually care for those toys as kids? Because like... they would always give them out, or if you went to a pharmacy, they would always have
those. Yeah, that was like a dollar store special.
They don't move.
Yeah, I wasn't too crazy about them.
Nah, I don't think so.
I think they're a more old school toy.
Yeah.
So Don Rickles was the only actor considered for Mr. Potato Head, and I can see why. It just fits together perfectly.
That is the perfect casting right there.
So another one, these are from MTV.com. Apparently, they still do things. Tom Hanks's brother, Jim, actually voices Woody in video games and other productions when Tom Hanks is not available.
I actually knew about this from a Did You Know video or something like that, but it's fascinating. And I hadn't considered the fact that, well, if a family member sounds similar enough and they can sort of, you know, mock or impersonate his brother and then impersonate Woody the character. So double impersonation kind of gets the job done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of the video games, I remember I owned the Toy Story Game Boy game, like original Game Boy. And I had the Super Nintendo. I don't think I ever made it past Pizza Planet. There was the part where they're hiding in the soda and the burger case. Like there's a level in the game where you have to do that. And that game was tough. I never beat it.
I don't think I've played a single Toy Story game.
That's the only one I think I played.
Man, the Super Nintendo one, I don't know if it's this. I'm assuming it's like similar to the Game Boy one. I hated it because it was a side-scrolling platformer, same thing like that one. But they would always have these platforms that you should be able to jump on top of because you jump and Woody clearly is able to reach it. But he never actually goes up there. And every toy, you're Woody, but every toy is attacking you.
Yeah.
Like, why?
Classic old school platformer.
Yep.
Everything wants to kill you.
Why does Macaulay Culkin have a gun in the Home Improvement platformer?
Macaulay Culkin? You mean Tim Allen?
Macaulay Culkin in Home Improvement.
No, I mean, oh yeah. Did I say Home Improvement? I meant the Home Alone platformer. He still has a gun. He gets a bazooka. I watched a speed run of it recently.
Can you imagine Macaulay Culkin as Tim White? I was going to say Tim Allen's son.
The crossover of the century. Macaulay Culkin as a referee in Hell in a Cell.
We still got more fun facts. Before we're off the rails completely, which we already are. The toolbox on top of the milk crate that Woody is trapped in is a Binford, the same type of tool that Alan used on his hit television show Home Improvement. I never put that together.
Good old Binford tools.
Well done, Juan.
Tim the Tool Man Taylor.
Let's see. Billy Crystal was originally asked to voice Buzz Lightyear in Toy Story, but the actor declined. It's the only regret I have in business of something I passed on, he later told ABC News. Well, I think I can speak for everyone when we say thank you, Billy Crystal, for passing on it, because I just don't think it would have worked in the same way.
No offense, Mr. Crystal, but thank God.
We're good. We're good on that.
The movie saved Etch-A-Sketch. Ohio Art Company, the company that makes Etch-A-Sketch, was nearly bankrupt before Toy Story. Wow. After they allowed Etch-A-Sketch to be in the film, they saw a 20% sales increase that saved the company. Holy crap.
That's amazing. That makes me so happy.
Yeah. Yeah. That is the power of that movie. That was a thing where it's like, there you go. That was clearly one where they weren't even really trying to sell that toy, but because the movie was so good, it sold them anyway.
Exactly.
And the Etch-A-Sketch, when you think about toys growing up, to me, that was always one of the staples, right? you got to have an Etch-A-Sketch, or you got to know somebody, because you got to get good at it. So it was a skill-based toy.
Got to get good.
Yeah, so I'm really happy that it was
and
able to save that.
And they did a good job with that, with like those staple toys, because you had the Etch-A-Sketch, the Mr. Potato Head. Even though they don't really highlight it, Andy had that like orange Hot Wheels track that everybody had, where it's that, where the loop and stuff like that, with the army men and the Speak and Spell. Like, those were like, those are staple toys, and they don't really do much to highlight them, but as shown by this Etch-A-Sketch bit, that even just being in such a great movie is enough to just push them over the edge. I'm sure, even though it wasn't as dire, the same thing happened with Mr. Potato Head, where Mr. Potato Head's sales shot through the roof this movie.
Definitely. And I also like just little things where the little touches where the army men are talking about the toys that he gets, and they mention, oh, he got Battleship. And then later on, you'll see two of the toys are actually playing Battleship against each other. Just little things like that were really cool.
I want to play Battleship now. It has nothing to do with this episode.
I hated Battleship.
What? Why?
It's a bad game.
Dude. I like the electronic version where you didn't have to...
It's all luck. Like, it's all RNG based.
Well, but yeah, so, it's somewhat luck, but once you hit a piece of the ship, then you got to kind of like, you know, figure out which direction the rest of the ship
is. I'm offended.
I'll put it to you this way. I'd rather watch the Rihanna movie Battleship than play a game of Battleship.
Wow. Really? Because one could be over a lot sooner.
Yeah. That's, Keith, that's don't true. Say things... This is recorded. I hope you realize that. So people can...
Yes, I know what I said.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Everybody listening and watching, which one would you rather do? Watch the movie or play the game? So to close things off, talking about the legacy of Toy Story, what is the one thing that you're like, when I think about Toy Story and what it left for movies, what it left for animation, what it left for video games? Because this transcended the movie. This became an entire experience that... Cars was made possible because of Toy Story, and I guarantee you that every animated movie since then, if they didn't have toys, they definitely thought of them, or, hey, how can this character look like a friendlier toy? What do we got to animate differently so they sell better? What do you think Toy Story left for that?
I mean, if there was no Toy Story, there would be no Pixar. There would be no animation craze that followed. Like, I think you can directly tie every single Pixar movie that happened afterwards, success or failure, to the success of Toy Story. If Toy Story flopped, we would not have Inside Out. We would not have Coco. We would not have the ones that people don't like Cars. Like, Toy Story was a revolutionary movie for 3D animation film and proof that it can be done properly in an extremely successful way.
Yeah, absolutely. Toy Story... It really, because of the success of Toy Story, we were basically able to have one of the greatest movie studios of all time continue to work, and that's Pixar. And we got some other fantastic movies like Finding Nemo, and Up is another one of my personal favorites.
So good.
So many classic, amazing movies. There's just that extra bit of love I feel like Pixar puts into a lot of their movies that just make them classics. And really, it just started... It gave a lot of other studios confidence in the 3D animation kind of family movie genre. And because of that, a bunch, you know, DreamWorks has made tons of these movies, and some of those are pretty good too. So it really just kind of catapulted that family movie 3D era. Another interesting thing I believe is that Steve Jobs, I think, helped fund this movie because he wanted to see it through. Obviously, this is before like Disney completely owned Pixar, but just something interesting that if it wasn't for Steve Jobs, we wouldn't have Toy Story.
Huh. I did not know that.
Neither did I.
Interesting. But for me, I think the most redeeming thing about Toy Story, at kind of what you said, Ryan, when you brought up, it immediately reminded me of these movies. They can have all the wacky stuff. They can have all the crazy characters. But when it all boils down, It's all about the heart. It's about the emotions. They're setting up this, but at the end of the movie, you're going to be crying or very close to it. And I don't think the first movie definitely didn't do that. If there's one, not even a nitpick, but you take it for advantage. You take advantage of the fact that Pixar movies are going to make you cry. Like that is mm-hmm. that is the staple now.
It's the true. First Toy They're Story, way too good at it.
Yeah. But this first Toy Story, if you notice, it kind of just ends. The movie, like, it solves the situation, but there's no emotional attachment to the very end that makes it go, oh, or anything like that. You have some moments throughout the movie, but it laid the foundation for you really care about these characters. So anything that happens now, you're really going to care about.
Yeah, they took things that to the love next into level. The other ones. Yeah, exactly. They stayed, built a fantastic foundation, and then the sequels, that's when they can take things to the next level because they've built the character so well. Now you're attached, and now they can, Pixar going to make you cry.
No, now I'm just thinking about the ending of Toy Story 3 again. Oh.
I'm going to have to watch
now, that. Now, what part of the ending are you guys talking about?
It's the one, so spoilers for Toy Story 3, I guess. It's that last shot of, like, when Andy drops off the toys, and he's, like, he's going through it one last time, like, oh, this is Woody, this is Buzz, they're really good friends of mine, and then, so take real good care of them. And then he drives off, and then Woody's just, like, so long, partner. I know, it's the goddamn worst.
I'm feeling
worst.
Something right now, dude. Come on, we got to change the topic.
Make sure something. Well, yeah, now. Okay, because a lot of people, like, they were really emotional with the whole, like, fire part.
But oh, yeah, no, for me, that's some dark stuff.
I agree
stuff,
with you, Keith. But for me, it's when he's passing off the toys. You're like, oh, my God, this is too much. Like, so, yeah, that was very, very powerful.
Yeah, that was definitely for me as well, because it's, the other things are just kind of happening, but that's the moment. That's the moment where this is the shift. Like, yeah, I just really don't know where they're going with the fourth one. And honestly, well, I don't want to see a single trailer. I don't want to see anything.
Because I will say something, and it's not a spoiler, but when I was looking up the whole Tim Allen, Tom Hanks thing earlier to try and find if the voice acting thing, they were taught, there was a headline about Toy Story 4.
I've seen this headline.
Yeah. All I'm going to say, because there's nothing about the story at all, but just that it was very emotional for them to like finish recording it. So I'm guessing expect to cry again.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
It was to the point where they were saying like it was emotionally wrecking to finish that up. Like people aren't like,
what are
ready
they do?
For
it's
the
toys,
next Toy
man.
Story.
How do they do this to us?
I don't know. Some of the places they went in that third one are very, very dark. Like if you talk about things that only adults will get, like there was like borderline like World War II horror in that third Toy Story movie, like going
did you guys
very
hear about
dark
the
places.
Like the prank that someone did with the Toy Story 3?
No.
Is that they showed their family Toy Story 3, but they edited the ending of the movie so that when they're like sitting on the conveyor, like going to the fire, they just cut to the credits at the
oh my god, that's awful.
So like he convinced his family that that's how it ended.
Is this a video?
I'll have to find it. I'll
that
tweet
is
it out
pure
I'll tweet
evil.
It out if I can find it.
Wow. So naturally I think that we're gonna have to talk about Toy Story 4 here at some point when the movie mm-hmm. comes out. Something that I noticed we're sort of doing with the podcast, and we definitely want to get everybody's feedback, so don't forget to follow us on social media, A Cast of the Past. We do have the Discord. We can talk about any of the previous episodes, any of the upcoming ones. We're going to make sure we give it some more TLC, so you may find out future episodes before we even reveal them here as an edit incentive for the Discord. So that's acastofthepast.com/Discord, and you can also check us out just on YouTube. But we did a Resident Evil 2 episode where we played the PS1 game in preparation for the remake. So with this and maybe future episodes, we can sort of do something similar. We have the 0.5 episodes. This is an extended conversation, hour plus episode, right? But in the weeks between, you may notice that those episodes are anywhere between 20 to 30 minutes. So maybe we can just watch Toy Story 4 and we just talk about it in one of those episodes. But having said that, Mr. McNulty, what is the upcoming schedule for February 2019, buddy?
Wow, coming up so quick. Looking at the schedule, February 3rd, we're going to be talking about our favorite childhood snacks. So, you know, is it Lunchables? Is it Goldfish? We go through all the favorite snacks we had growing up. On February 10th, this was a listener choice movie, so you guys voted for it. We were picking 80s movies, and The Breakfast Club was voted in by you, so we will be taking a deep dive into that movie and taking a look at the sort of 80s teen movies and how Breakfast Club is such a memorable one in that category. Then February 17th, as Juan mentioned, Resident Evil 2, you can go check that episode right now, but there is a remake coming out, and Keith will be playing that one extensively.
So it's already out.
Oh, it is already out. My apologies.
As of this episode, it came out Friday. If you are listening to this on the day that this episode is coming out, I am so deep in RE2 that I have probably not come out to breathe for at least 2 or 3 days.
So I will probably not be playing the remake, but I will have something to talk about, as my experience with the original Resident Evil 2 has not ended, and I've continued to play, so I will have updates on my experience with that game. And then, lastly, on February 24th...
Rounding out February.
February 24th, taking a look at Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2, one of the most classic sports games and one of the best in the Tony Hawk franchise. I'm excited about that one as well.
Me too.
I forgot how many versions of that game exist, because there's one for the PS1, N64, Dreamcast, Game Boy Advance, and the original Xbox. And many people don't know about the last one. It's actually called Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2X, so it has graphical improvements and things like that. So I may check that out, but
maybe I could play the Dreamcast version. Holy crap. Yeah, I got one sitting on the my Dreamcast is on my shelf back there.
Oh, right. And it's the best looking out of the original
bunch. Is it really? So, oh man.
Yeah.
Is that an expensive game to pick up?
I'm gonna have to look for the Dreamcast. Yeah, I'm gonna have to look it up on Amazon.
Check that out right now, Keith. You're the fact checker. Like becoming your role. Whenever we say something on the show that we're like, we cannot sound like idiots, Keith, get the Google machine, and for the love of Pete, please fact check that so we don't sound like total idiots. But
so while I look this up, I have a question.
Uh-huh.
Is it February or February? Oh, like, do you say the R?
I know there's an R in there, but I say February.
All right.
February, yeah. Okay, Ryan, try to say it with the R after the B.
February.
It just feels wrong.
Because it's Brian, not Brian, when somebody says that, right? If somebody has the B with Brian. True. So how come with February we don't do that?
A pre-owned version of Tony Hawk 2 goes for about $14 on eBay.
Yeah, maybe I'll pick it up.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah, awesome. But everybody, feel free to play with us, alongside us with any of the episodes that we do, or watch any of the movies. You can go to the Discord. I tried to fix it.
Oh my God. I tried to hold it together.
I see Ryan holding back, and I'm like, oh, I said it. I can't take it back. But seriously, one thing we absolutely want to do with this podcast as we keep going is getting your input in. Sometimes because of our recording schedule, it makes it difficult, because sometimes we record on a Monday to publish Sunday, but sometimes we do 2 weeks ahead. So it's just a little difficult, but that's where the Discord comes in. So you can play with us on the Discord channel. And leave a 5-star review. If you like this train wreck, go to iTunes, go to wherever you are listening to this, and leave
that on YouTube for some reason.
Please. Cry. Yeah, you didn't even watch Toy Story 2 now.
It's like
crying.
I watched Toy Story 3. I'm in tears right now.
Ryan, you've got a friend.
Oh, man.
You got a friend in me. We can't sing too much because we'll get the copyright. On another exciting episode of Incast.
To the past.
You're still crying, buddy.
Yeah.
Only on the inside.
I love you, Ryan.
Only on the inside.
I'll play with you.
Whoa.
On the Discord.
Yeah. Goodbye.